Step into this neat garden house on the skirts of Winbury. Walk forward into the little parlour. There they are, at dinner. Allow me to introduce them to you. Mr. Dunn, curate of Winbury. Mr. Malone, curate of Briarfield. Mr. Sweeting, curate of Nunnally. These are Mr. Dunn's lodgings, being the habitation of one John Gale, a small clothier. Mr. Dunn has kindly invited his brethren to regale with him. You and I will join the party, see what is to be seen and hear what is to be heard. At present, however, they are only eating, and while they eat, we will talk aside. These gentlemen are in the bloom of youth. They possess all the activity of that interesting age, an activity which their moping old vicars would fain turn into the channel of their pastoral duties, often expressing a wish to see it expended in a diligent superintendence of the schools and in frequent visits to the sick of their respective parishes. But the youthful Levites feel this to be dull work. They prefer lavishing their energies on a course of proceeding which, though to other eyes it appear more heavy with ennui, more cursed with monotony than the toil of the weaver at his loom, seems to yield them an unfailing supply of enjoyment and occupation. I allude to a rushing backwards and forwards, among themselves, to and from their respective lodgings. Not a round, but a triangle of visits, which they keep up all the year through, in winter, spring, summer and autumn. Season and weather make no difference. With unintelligible zeal, they dare snow and hail, wind and rain, mire and dust, to go and dine, or drink tea, or sup with each other. What attracts them, it would be difficult to say. It is not friendship, for whenever they meet, they quarrel. It is not religion, the thing is never named amongst them. Theology they may discuss occasionally, but piety, never. It is not the love of eating and drinking. Each might have as good a joint and pudding, tea as potent, and toast as succulent, at his own lodgings, as is served to him at his brother's. Mrs. Gale, Mrs. Hogg, and Mrs. Whip, their respective landladies, affirm that it is just for naught else but to give folk trouble. By folk, the good ladies of course mean themselves, for indeed they are kept in a continual fry by this system of mutual invasion. Mr. Dunn and his guests, as I have said, are at dinner. Mrs. Gale waits on them, but a spark of the hot kitchen fire is in her eye. She considers that the privilege of inviting a friend to a meal occasionally, without additional charge, a privilege included in the terms on which she lets her lodgings, has been quite sufficiently exercised of late. The present week is yet but at Thursday, and on Monday, Mr. Malone, the curate of Briarfield, came to breakfast and stayed dinner. On Tuesday, Mr. Malone and Mr. Sweeting of Nunnally came to tea, remained to supper, occupied the spare bed, and favoured her with their company to breakfast on Wednesday morning. Now, on Thursday, they are both here at dinner, and she is almost certain they will stay all night. "C'en est trop," she would say, if she could speak French. Mr. Sweeting is mincing the slice of roast beef on his plate and complaining that it is very tough. Mr. Dunn says the beer is flat. Aye, that is the worst of it. If they would only be civil, Mrs. Gale wouldn't mind it so much. If they would only seem satisfied with what they get, she wouldn't care. But these young parsons is so high and so scornful, they set everybody beneath their feet. They treat her with less than civility just because she doesn't keep a servant, but does the work of the house herself, as her mother did afore her. Then, they're always speaking against Yorkshire ways and Yorkshire folk. And by that very token, Mrs. Gale does not believe one of them to be a real gentleman, or come of gentle kin. "The old parson is worth the whole lump of college, lads,"